morning. Welcome to the Josephine County Board of Commissioners weekly business session. Today is November 2nd, 2016 at 9 a.m. And if you'll please stand, we'll say the Pledge of Allegiance to begin. Okay, it's a pleasure to always start off with recognizing some of our employees. And this morning, we have two in attendance. These are both from the fairgrounds, and it looks like we have also our fairgrounds manager with us this morning, too. So our two folks are Cynthia Berman at the fairgrounds for 5 years, and Dale Kreis. Did I pronounce that correctly, or Chris?
Kreis.
Kreis, thank you. And also with us for 5 years. And if you would all come forward, including you, Peggy Anderson, and we'd like to have you come up and...
Morning. Congratulations.
Morning.
Morning. Good to see you.
No, really.
Thank
you. Dale, thank you.
You love the job.
Appreciate you. That's why we're...
You do. Thank you very much. Peggy, thank you. If you'd like to each say something, or if you'd like to say something about the fairgrounds, you're welcome. Just step over the podium and state your name for the record. They're at the microphone. Would you?
On the spot.
Good morning. I would just like to say that these two employees certainly are what the county needs to have on staff within us. They're dedicated. They always show up. I never have to worry about what's going to go on with both of them. And truly, they're honest and their integrity is very good. And I really appreciate the opportunity that you have selected to recognize them today. And I just want to say thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to work with you guys.
Great.
Well, thank you very much. Okay. You have quite a job out there, and we appreciate everything mm-hmm. you've done. Thank you.
We're going to get back to work now.
Okay.
Well, before
we
you guys
mind,
leave,
really.
I just wanted to say I was the liaison to the fairgrounds when both of you guys were hired under a previous manager. You guys have been through a lot out there at the fairgrounds. I don't want to just gloss over the fact that that's been one of the most challenged programs in our entire county, you know, outside of the public safety service. And you guys have done an amazing job out there in the last 5 years. It probably wouldn't be open today without you too. So, I mean, that's the truth. It's the staff and the manager that, you know, limited volunteers out there. All that comes together to make it happen. And if one little piece of that puzzle wasn't there, it wouldn't be open to the public today. And so I recognize that, and I wanted to make sure that you guys know that this board feels that way, that we're really proud to have it open and you guys as staff and working out there. It's a partnership, and I just appreciate it a lot. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
As I was going to say, as the liaison.
Current after every the last couple of days.
The things that get done, people generally don't notice. When things don't get done, everybody notices. So it's delightful to see, and I'm fairly aware of how many hours y'all put in and how it's something with, as Commissioner Hare mentioned, it wouldn't be open if there weren't people like you and the hard work that you do. So maintenance, office, and all that kind of stuff that you are responsible for, Cynthia, for putting together and bringing together and making sure everybody's awake and that kind of thing. So it really is appreciated by all of us. And you are the picture of county employees that make the county work effectively. Thank you again for what you do.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Expect 1 to 5 more years.
Yeah.
Bet.
Great.
Thank you. We hope so. Okay, we have other employees that could not be here today. We have Edward Coney of the Sheriff's Office for 20 years. Jill Burrows, also of the Sheriff's Office, 15 years. Frederick Dempsey in Transit, 5 years. And Angela McIntosh, Transit, for 5 years. And I presume those folks are all probably working today and couldn't get away from their shifts because they're on schedules that wouldn't allow them to do that. But we sure do appreciate their service and thank them very much. Okay, on to item two, our administrative actions. This is 2A, approval of report and recommendation for disposal of property pursuant to ordinance number 2014-003. It has my name on this, but I wasn't here last Thursday. So let me pull this up.
I think your name was on it because of being the liaison.
Yeah, I was a liaison, and so I'm going to pull this up here so I can refresh my memory. Okay, this is property, excess property, that we've had evidence type of things at the sheriff's office. And so there comes a time when this has to be disposed of, and oftentimes we have to keep it for a certain period of time or for trials or whatever. So there's come a time that it has to be sold, and this is property that we will be selling. It says unknown revenue. We don't know, of course, until it sells what revenue it might bring in, but this is just an authorization for them to go ahead and pursue selling this property.
And on this auction, there's a large percentage of it is weapons or ammunition, which will all be sold, only be sold to recognized, federally recognized gun dealers. So, but it's a matter of trying to clear the process, and all of them have met their responsibility as far as being held for any cases and that kind of a thing. So it's the time to move them on and return that money so it can be spent in other ways by the Sheriff's Department.
So true.
Two elements of clarification. The revenue does not go directly to the Sheriff's Department. It comes to the board to allocate to the public safety system. And the other one is this is not excess property. This is evidenced
property.
Did
I say the word excess? It was evidence.
I think it's just the start when you first started out trying to find what it was we were talking about.
Yeah, I was getting my opinion.
And there's a difference. Excess property
it's
is
unclaimed.
The stuff that the county has had and no longer is in need of. And we did one of those a couple of weeks ago with some vehicles that are managed by our fleet department in Public Works. That's excess property.
That's excess, just correct.
Real quick clarification.
All right, thank you. All right, moving on. Item three. Short meeting today. We have requests and comments from citizens, and we have three citizens today. Would you like to say something, Mr. and Mrs. Ford? Mr. Ford.
Larry Ford, 136 Ferry Road, Grants Pass. The fairgrounds folks have left, but you know, we were talking before the meeting with them. It's amazing the process it's gone through in the last 5 years. For the fairgrounds, they've really turned that whole place around back to having rodeos again, which I think really brings a lot of people to the fairgrounds in an off-season setting in the spring. Hopefully they'll continue that. With the, if you mentioned with the sale of the firearms, the county could sell those to the public. I think it's wise for them to choose to not get an FFL and go through all that rigmarole, because it is quite extensive. I used to have one, and sell it to, hopefully it'll be local gun dealers, and that money will circulate back through the county again. But you'd, certainly anybody from any FFL holder could buy those. I think we're getting into the time again where, you know, we need to put pressure as much as we can on our state representatives. You know, the deal with the taxing from the marijuana coming back, and we're never going to get very much of it. There's no reason for have a dispensary here. Your neighbor probably grows it. So the sales from recreational are all going to go up north. We're going to have all the headaches with how to fund it, how to enforce it, the law enforcement aspect that's going to come forward. And that money still is going to go north to the big cities. I know I've talked to Carl Wilson, and he would like to push forward to make some of those changes. I think anything as the BCC could do to help that process would be greatly appreciated, because we need to get some of that money down here for whatever's going to happen in our law enforcement. Having to hold these people to, you know, to get their permits they're supposed to. Most of them don't have them. We need to get money back in our county to support the programs that are going to come out of selling medical and mostly recreational marijuana. Thank you.
We did send the board requested, I think it was 2 weeks ago, to draft a letter to send to the governor's office in that regard, and we did do that. We sent a letter up there detailing the issues that we have and requesting that changes be made. So yes, we've done that. Thank you. We understand that. Would you like to say something, Ms. Ahrens?
Yes, Judy Ahrens, a resident of Josephine County. First, I'd like to just a couple comments on the Rural Planning Committee that was held on October 21st, Halloween night. I know the board appoints those, if I'm correct, to a selector, however that goes through that selection process. And I don't know if any of you there, the room was packed. It was really packed with a lot of comments. So if you didn't see it, Mike Jones did the whole thing last night. You can see the whole thing because there was a lot of comments on both sides. Some people were talking about their neighbors and how it's affecting theirs, but the train had already left the station. That was way back. This is on a totally different issue regarding code enforcement officers. So some people are coming from different directions and voicing their opinion. Unfortunately, they don't come to a lot of meetings or whatever, but it was great to see that interest. The only thing my concern was is that there were a lot of younger people here who want to have their kids out enjoying the activities and festivities, and because it was such an important issue to them, they had it on that night. Now, they said they had to have it on that night because of whatever, and yet they're going to have another meeting on Monday night, this coming Monday at 6 o'clock, to make their decision with no more input, which probably people can still call in and give their input if they wanted to. So that's just my issue on that, and I had a lot of concerns about a 75-minute presentation. Maybe that could have been shortened and things out here, so it would have speeded up the process, because pretty tired people, once they had the break, a third of them left, and they didn't get a chance to speak. I was one of those, because I had some things to do, so it was just maybe there's a better we can always improve. And 4-H, we always say, make the best better, so we could make it better. Another thing I was going to say, just as I came in, and I had commented to Wendy, sweet Wendy, that of all the trash and the eyesore of the cart that's out here, I'll take some pictures, and I think, Commissioner Heck, you said there's a person I give it, but I'll take all those pictures, because even as we consider and the issues out there that we're a poor county, yada, 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 and all the things that are going on, we don't want to increase that by people saying our government buildings look pretty darn trashy. So I think if we give that a higher priority, even though the standards for people in our society in general is pretty lousy, we can still encourage them. We might even have, along with Breastfeeding Month or whoever does that, we could have something that, say, be good stewards, not the environmental. They have a different agenda. But just to be good stewards, and we can encourage them and the schools. And Commissioner Hare, when you go out to schools and when you speak, just be good stewards. We have to learn. It starts at home, and we don't have everybody working now. So that's the case there. And also, just once again, I think I've hammered at this before, but it would really be nice if we had our captain chairs and that table back there, because even business people that come in used to put their laptop on there and do things, and I don't know why we couldn't have that back. So that would be a good idea too. And Veterans Day is coming up, so if we could have something for the veterans on the 11th at our next meeting. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I'll bring it back to the board. We'll entertain a motion, unless you wish to say something now or you want to
wait
till
the end. I just wanted, okay. We only had two speakers, so it'll be short. I haven't seen that letter that we supposedly sent. I think we understood the general premise of it. We're pretty dissatisfied with the legislators' final resolution on the distribution formula that was arrived at under legislation 3400. I'd like to see a copy of that. I'm sure I'm totally in line with what we're saying. There's a lot of shortcomings in the system right now. Without enforcement of those who don't have a license is another issue that Commissioner Walker referred to the board, that through our code enforcement officers and planning office, if they don't have a license, they're not going to enforce them. And it's that just seems like, well, then why would anybody get a license? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. The system has a lot of room for improvement. That's what I would say. And we're working diligently with AOC and the legislators, the Association of Oregon Counties, and Rob Bovet to try to get that fixed. But it's got a long way to go, in my opinion. Ms. Ahrens, Only heard about that hearing that was going to take place, on Monday, the previous week, you know, kind of towards the end of the week. I didn't even know it was really on the schedule till a constituent came by the Board of Commissioners office and raised that issue. We do appoint the Rural Planning Commission members, and that's something we do. I understand that Mr. Church has just resigned, tendered his resignation effective the end of this year, so he's a long-term member of that Rural Planning Commission in good stead, done a great job, and so we're going to be advertising and looking to replace him as well, or rather his, there's a position that's kind of waiting in the wings on the Rural Planning Commission. When we reduced it from 9 to 7, Commissioner Walker's right, we put in an alternate position so that somebody would be up to speed. Some of these issues are kind of complex, and if somebody, or multi-meeting, if they leave halfway through, it's best to have somebody who's kind of been following it along so that we don't have to struggle for a quorum. So I think that served us well, and we'll be moving forward with that. I've heard some of the same kind of critiques, I'd say, is that the 75-minute presentation was a little bit long. From that standpoint, although I heard also that it was very thorough and comprehensive. So it's tough to do a complicated issue and address, hopefully, most everyone's questions. Maybe that was why some of the people left before the end. I do understand that it went a little long, and that's something that I would like to work on. My family would consider it rude to hold a public meeting past that kind of a time frame, especially for the volunteers who are on the committee. And for the public who's looking for an opportunity to comment, but they're, you know, they've got kids to get in bed or what have you for the next day, that if you're going to break it up into two meetings anyway, it might be best to kind of have a cutoff that everybody knows about so that they can wait for an appropriate time. And that's just an organizational thing that sometimes gets lost in the shuffle. I would recommend 9 or 9:30, not past that. I know that the city often goes past those times, and that's really inappropriate, I think, for the public who's looking for a public time to comment. I know that there were a number of businesses on Halloween that closed really early, and that's understandable. People have things that are going on, and so I'm not sure about scheduling these things for the duration of time. It getting these things done in a timely fashion. I'm not sure where. I know that we want to get it done, and I think Ms. Meltzer rightly articulated that it's not appropriate to be implementing rules that might affect growers in the middle of the spring. So getting it done as soon as possible before the season starts so that people can plan is good business. We want to be kind of a partner in that element of trying to work with people to refine the rules, and that makes perfect sense that we would try to get it done as soon as possible. So it's a delicate issue. We just need to kind of try to find our way through. That is just one of probably many hearings. There'll be, like you said, another one next Monday, and then it's going to come to the Board of Commissioners for probably another set of hearings. So if we choose to take that issue up. So there'll be multiple opportunities for people to address this issue. It's not one and done, certainly. And we're going to try to work through the process so that we have the best regulations possible that serve the interests of the public at large. So may not have been the best evening, but I can kind of understand where she was at with trying to get the process started. A lot of times we just kind of go through stuff and we don't have that element of urgency. There should be an element in urgency in almost everything we do here, because government is inherently slow. So without that urgency, then things may never happen. So that's all I wanted to say.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
A couple of things. One is on the marijuana situation, Mr. Ford. You put your finger on the issue. It's not just a simple issue, as you will understand, and try to support. Because it's a whole broad spectrum. I mean, we have either, I think, 67 or 69 registered recreational marijuana grows in Josephine County. We have one medical grow, that's a dispensary grow in Josephine County, registered dispensary in Josephine County. All of the rest, they say how many, 2,600, 3,000? Different grows. I mean, you can take your pick. All becomes anecdotal. And there needs to be some kind of some kind of accountability supervision. You know, it'd be wonderful to have the marijuana industry, the cannabis industry, to come up with a list of their recommendations. And if you're going to be growing cannabis in Josephine County, there are a couple of organizations that are here in Josephine County that have a pretty wide support from the growers, and to have them promote and present some rules, or what does it mean to have marijuana grow in Josephine County. But right now we're on the front edge of this thing, and it's trying to catch a fire hose as it's spraying around, and you're going to get hit half the time. But it's a problem. I mean, it is a problem, and anybody who thinks that it's going to just, everybody's going to peacefully acquiesce and roll over and it's done, I mean, that's not true. On the one thing, on my sense of humor is weird, I acknowledge that, but on the auction list, there is Ringo the Clown by Arnis Sarnoff is up for sale, too. Maybe we can get that for the Board of Commissioners.
The board is prohibited from purchasing public employees.
Oh, fortunately.
Those are the rules.
What I would like to add in regards to the Monday night presentation is that Ms. Meltzer is very aware of members of the public saying that the county is not making information available or they're not transparent enough, although everything we do is online, everything. And public meetings are always open and people welcome to attend. So, and as you can see, we have three stalwart citizens here. So, you know, we make it available. Whether people do it or not is up to them. But that being said, Ms. Meltzer is very aware that this issue, the marijuana issue, is one that can be very contentious because people have very definitive opinions. And the rules that she is proposing, which I've not read it in its entirety, but what she is proposing, she wanted to make sure that everyone understood what was in there. So she covered the entire document to make sure that everyone had the opportunity to know and prepare any questions if they have them about what's in there. She didn't want to gloss over anything so anyone would be surprised or not read it themselves and then come back and say, gee, I didn't know that was there. She tried to cover the entire document. As to the timing of it, the industry, the people are already, you know, once they finish harvesting their crop, which is pretty much like now, once they finish that crop, they have to start planning for the next year. They will start planting those seeds in the greenhouses and getting the potting ready in February because they want them out typically mid-April. They start putting those things out in April. So if we wait on any kind of ordinance or anything for very long, we're going to be still coming next spring because we have all the time frames that have to be met. So I think she was trying to work backwards from that kind of thing. The other thing that she has done is when we held all the town halls around the county is that she was at all of those meetings, and she has contacted many of the growers that attended those meetings for their input on what needed to be in this proposal. So it's not something that is being pulled out of the sky because somebody thought they wanted to put something in there. She's actually talked to these people. She's met with them. She's had them review documents. She's had them assist her in trying to put something together that would work. And many of them, the legitimate growers who are out there trying to do this professionally and according to the law, they want order as well. And they're very much also wanting to have safety and security for their families and their employees. So a lot of the provisions that are in there are geared toward that request, not only by the public, but by the growers. So she's tried to accommodate and meld those interests into a single type of proposal. So going forward, as the other two commissioners said, there will be further hearings. This is not the last opportunity for people to have input. There's opportunities for that up until the hearings with the commissioners as well. So that will happen. Any other comment? Okay, moving forward then. I will entertain a motion to approve item 2A, Approval of report and recommendation for disposal of property pursuant to ordinance 2014-003. And again, this is not excess county property. This is evidence and property that's unclaimed.
I would so move.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Okay, being none, roll call, please.
Commissioner Hare?
Yes.
Commissioner Beck?
Yes.
Commissioner Walker?
Yes, motion carries. Moving on to the consent calendar, we have minutes from the executive session, the open portion on October 19th, 2016, the county administration workshop on October 20th, 2016, executive session, the open session, October 24th, 2016, general discussion, October 25th, 2016, and the weekly business session, October 26th, 2016. Item 4B, resolution number 2016-067, in the matter of an appointment to the Josephine County Mental Health Advisory Board. It has my name on it. I'm not liaison to mental health, but let's see here. Oh, Alyssa Prince. All right. Very good. I know who Alyssa is. That's a good appointment. So,
she's the member at large, and her term expires November 2nd, 2020.
Yes.
2020.
Yeah, 4 years.
2020.
Gee.
Madam Chair, I'd move for approval of the consent calendar items A and B.
And I would second that.
Okay, thank you.
And I would concur with the Chair's understanding of the Alyssa Prince. She's been to several of the meetings, mm-hmm. and just on top of things, sharp, very experienced, and should be a big asset to this board for sure.
Yes, I've met with her a couple of times. She's a very focused and dedicated, bright young lady, so she'll be good on the board. All right, roll call, please.
Commissioner Hare?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. Do we have any other business before the board?
No.
Okay, any other matters from commissioners?
Madam Chair, later today I was invited to a meeting. It's open to the public, so it's not a private or anything meeting of the Oregon Forestry Board that's meeting over in Ashland later today. Actually, they're meeting right now, but I'll be over there to testify on rulemaking that they're proposing to do. They've got 11 meetings scheduled throughout the state over the next couple of months to refine this position. Right now, they're looking at a number of different rulemaking opportunities, but one is to establish or expand riparian setback reserves from their current standard, and I'll be testifying what kind of an impact that may have in Southern Oregon. Historically, we've been kind of exempt from that, and from a standpoint of riparian management is pretty key, and we saw that is in the resource management plan that the BLM just recently developed and adopted. They reduced the riparian setback from 2 tree lengths to 1 tree length, really from a standpoint of forest resiliency and fuel loads to try to stave off fires and their intensity in those riparian areas. What we'd often see is in the summertime, if there's management on either side of a riparian area and there isn't in that specific as a pretty broad spectrum, and sometimes it can be up to 600 feet, you really kind of provide a corridor for fuel, for fire, to just kind of move up a terrain really rapidly and then spread to other areas, go to the top of the crest, and make it really challenging to manage that fire in those high-intensity fuel-loaded areas. So there really isn't the scientific backing that says that it improves critical stream habitat, water temperatures outside of a pretty minimal duration of spans on either side, and even for some in-stream management is sometimes really key. So I think the Soil and Water Conservation Districts and some others are really proponents of not restricting the regulations so dramatically that we can't do management in those areas. So that's what I'm going to advocate for. In Josephine and Jackson counties, we've got some challenges. We have the highest propensity in the state for catastrophic wildfire in the summertime. 25 to 30% of the state fires happen in these two counties in any given year. We also have the most complex system of ownership out of 600 western counties. And so you can see those two things working probably against the creation and maintenance of habitat. And so it really is incumbent upon local agencies, federal and state, to have a pretty broad number of tools in the tool chest and not be restricted on the management in those areas. So I'll be going over there and just providing some brief testimony, more to the idea that without a significant study on this issue by the Oregon Department of Forestry, who really established the rules for private land management in the state of Oregon under the Oregon State Forest Practices Act, it's really key to have an understanding of the different ecosystems around the state. It's not a one-size-fits-all kind of a prescription, in my opinion. The other topic that I wanted to address was we have an election coming up here a week from yesterday. It's really important that if you're mailing your ballot in, that you not wait till the last moment. I would suggest getting it in at the very latest by maybe tomorrow. I don't know what the official timeline is, but don't chance it. Get it in by tomorrow if you're going to mail it. If you're going to deliver it, there's a number of delivery drop-off spots around the county. Those cutoff date and times will be Tuesday at 8 p.m. They won't be accepting anything late after that, either being mailed or dropped off. So it's really important to get that. And I think this is a pretty pivotal election like all are. But what's different about this election than any other election we've seen in recent memory of in Oregon is that we have a presidential election, a national election, and the general, and also a governor election. So those two things haven't happened in Oregon, I think, in over 50 years. So it's going to be pretty pivotal for the direction of both our state and the nation this election. So I encourage you to get out and participate. Do your duty as a registered voter. Having said that, there's a member of this board that's up for re-election and one that is not seeking re-election, and then myself. And so I've been here twice before in a situation where we've got we inherit a lame duck situation. In both of those situations, I think it's really important that we balance the policy directions that we're going to be making and the decisions as a board, and then leaving some of those to be determined by the next board, whoever is elected. And so that's always been my general rule of thumb after the election, that major policy issues and decisions be kind of turned over to that next board. Not that they couldn't reverse those decisions if they chose, but it's a little bit more cumbersome to reverse a decision rather than just be granted the authority to make that decision that they're going to have to live with for the next 4 years. And that may or may not include Commissioner Heck, but I think it's really key that we kind of adopt that policy. It's certainly one that I have, and I'm going to abide by that in the coming weeks and months. So you can probably expect our agendas to kind of be more administrative from a standpoint of routine business as opposed to major policy shifts in the county and going forward. Not that there isn't a tremendous amount that we still need to do on a number of different issues. Commissioner Walker has pretty much led the charge for this board on gathering a tremendous amount of information, being a liaison to the marijuana, either recreational or medical community, and has tried diligently to listen to the concerns of both the constituents that are not involved in the industry and those that are. And I think she's hopefully working really, really well with our new community development director to refine some rules that will work for everybody. Maybe not ideally, but something that will be better than what we have right now. The other thing that I was going to mention about the election is I was talking with some family members the other day who have young kids. They're not old enough to vote, and they were holding their decisions really close to the chest. They were not discussing those things, and I really see that as a shortcoming, not just in that family, not to be critical of my own family, but of society in general. It's kind of an ironic thing, and most people don't think about this, that we expect legislators, members of the state legislature and Congress, to openly, freely discuss these kinds of issues, and yet they haven't really received any training as a society. Most of the discussions that I've either seen online or personally, they end in a heated discussion where, frankly, they're so committed to their positions and passions that they lose sight of the fact that really their position on the issue is less important, honestly, than their ability to discuss it as civil members of society. And if they're not being groomed with that ability at the home where it should be the easiest to do so, how are they expected to do that either in the classroom, in college, or when they find themselves in a profession and leadership trying to do that? That's a real, I think it's a shortcoming, that we are not taught how to discuss things in a civil way and try to take emotion out of it as much as possible. I had coffee with a gentleman who's involved in the marijuana industry the other day, and the conversation almost got cut off from a standpoint that he could not discuss the issue without getting emotionally charged, and it almost sometimes leads to sarcasm or belittling the other person because of their perspective. And that's not constructive at all, to exchange information and try to reach a resolve. And I think for the most part, this board has done a really good job of not getting mired down in the emotional element of the issue, whether we disagree or agree, trying to reach a resolve and not necessarily digging in our heels based on preconceived ideas of a perspective on an issue. Working out to the best consensus for the people is really what needs to be the goal, and I think serves conversation about these issues really well. So in my opinion, I think people really need to try to engage in these conversations and not shy away from them. And if they don't, dissolve into an issue of emotion and, you know, belittlement, then you just got to walk away and don't let it rule the relationship or ruin the relationship, I mean to say. So take advantage of this as an opportunity. No, don't shy away from it, which is hard to do, easy to say. That's what I had to say.
Commissioner Hick. I just was second Commissioner Hare's reminder. Tuesday is election day. And as oftentimes we are very good at making a lot of noise, but we don't do a lot of follow through. Election day is follow through. That's when we as voters have the opportunity to speak as individuals in a political arena to make it heard. And if we don't want to do that, then that's one of the sad consequences of not voting. You are simply stepping back from that arena. And this is the arena that our Constitution has given to us as citizens of the United States to speak to these issues. Not speak because we all agree, but speak and have an active part in it. So I would encourage everyone to make sure that they do exercise that freedom, that responsibility that we have as citizens of the United States, and to exercise your vote.
Well, I would like to comment as well. I've heard a lot of people say, I may not vote this year because I don't know who to vote for, or it's lesser of two evils, or my vote won't matter. And frankly, I've heard those arguments ever since I was a little kid. And when you read history and you go back and you read about other presidential elections or other major elections, whether it's a state election or whatever, that's kind of been the conversation or rhetoric or arguments since the country began. And particularly when you read about some of the election of Thomas Jefferson and some of the others that went through very contentious times. And to me, voting is not an option. What you do is you evaluate the candidates, you evaluate the issues, you try to evaluate what the consequences may be if you elect one or another. And as Commissioner Hare said, you know, have the discussion, talk about it, make a decision. Because to not vote is basically abdicating not just your right, but your responsibility for keeping our nation a free nation. We have one of the lowest voter turnouts of any democratic country in the world, which to me is rather shameful. Because people are always quick to, you know, stick a flag in the back of their truck or on their car window or, you know, rah, 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 4th of July. But it isn't just about that. It's about exercising that right and meeting the responsibility to make sure the democracy continues. And as much as someone may not wish to vote because they don't like a candidate or candidates, to me that's not an option. Because it's nothing more heartbreaking to me than to see a low voter turnout or even anything less than a 95% voter turnout, which I don't think we've had that ever. But to look at voter turnout, particularly if it's less than 50%, because whoever prevails wins, but then you're talking about probably less than 25% of the population has made a decision for the rest of the of the city, county, or federal. You know, someone else has made that decision. And then people are quick to complain. And one of the questions I sometimes ask when they're complaining about a candidate or something is, did you vote in the election? And if they didn't vote, and we have a, you know, there's always a family that has one, someone who doesn't vote, and they'll be sitting there complaining, I'll say, did you vote? Well, no, because I couldn't make a decision. It's fine. Then your argument to me doesn't hold a lot of validity because you didn't make a choice. So make that choice. Sit down, contemplate, think about it, think about the future you want, think about the country we want to preserve, and make a choice. Make that choice so that we can actually say the people did choose. Because if the people don't choose, our democracy is not as strong as it should be. And it actually, in my view, weakens it. So please make a choice. Whether it's the county race, city, state, federal, whatever it is, make a choice.
You jogged my memory about something, and you said that people often think that their vote doesn't count. The election that makes my mind say, well, yeah, it does, to a degree, was the Measure 91 in Josephine County. It was a statewide measure, but in Josephine County, it was just two votes. So it was 17,313 people voted against Measure 91 in Josephine County. That was the legalization of marijuana, of recreational marijuana in Oregon. 17,311 voted for it. So two people could have easily either made it tie or, you know, definitively said one way or the other. And in Josephine County, it failed. And we know that there's a number of elections in the past. Commissioner Walker's election was particularly close.
The difference in the election for me to win, which was in a recount, was 56 votes, which amounts to like 1.2 votes per precinct.
Or 28 people voting the other direction. Mm. So if you don't think your vote matters, position does. Mm. I always think about when Mom and Dad were asking and some other people about your election and how should I make the decision on a question, I would say make the decision as though you're making the ultimate decision. Well, that's how you should cast your vote. Not one of many, the only one that's cast, as though you were making that ultimate decision, and that's how you should craft your election.
That brings to question, you know, the protest votes. And in my view, protest votes are I've heard people say, well, I'm going to vote for, this obscure candidate, or I'm going to write in something
Mickey
or whatever.
Mouse.
And it's like, really, a protest vote? What you're doing is, again, hurting the process, because a protest vote is failing to make a decision. Like you say, if you're going to be making a decision, look at that question and say, if I were the one to make the final decision, how would I want this to turn out?
Right.
What would be the consequences? What would be the unintended consequences? How do I vote? Look at it that way, not as, well, I'm going to do a protest vote.
And even though they're not ideal, that's not too much different than the kind of decisions that we all make every day. We're allocating, you know, money, and if it's not the ideal situation that we would design, we're not always dealt the perfect hand here. Rarely are we ever dealt the perfect hand. We're usually making the best of a bad situation. So that's not that much different than what you're expecting your elected officials to do. It's kind of an extension. So
every vote matters.
Yep.
Everyone. So please cast your ballot. Again, as Commissioner Harris said, I wouldn't mail it anything after tomorrow. I would take it in.
Yeah.
Because you never know what's going to happen to the mail. You don't know if there might be a storm and you can't get your ballot in or whatever. So please get them there. And I know they're really getting a good turnout, but that doesn't mean we need to fall off on our own responsibilities.
Well,
my ballot's in.
The sad thing is they're getting a very good turnout. That means we're getting about 28% of the ballots have come in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need more than that.
That's a great turnout?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's at this stage.
Yeah, well,
for
but
mailing
even so,
ballots.
Even so, that is not, it's not like we've got 65% of the ballots already in.
No.
Yeah, it's but we need to take it more seriously and realize that we have been given this privilege to take this voice and speak. Okay. Speak.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Great.
It is 9:44 and we are adjourned.